This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
House Transportation Committee will come to order. Welcome everyone, and to anyone who might be listening over the internet, please make sure that your phones are turned to the quiet mode. And at this time, I would ask our secretary to please call the roll.
Representative Chase.
Here.
Representative Schaefer.
Here.
Representative Clark.
Here.
Lesmeister, excused. Bordeaux, excused. Fry Miller, Johnson, excused. Livermont,
here.
Dennard, excused.
No, Dennard is here.
Was he?
Uh-huh. I didn't see. Say it louder.
Thank you. Goodwin,
here.
May,
she's
excused. Rasmussen.
Here.
Duvall.
Here. We do have a quorum, just barely, but we do. This time I'd ask our pages, please come up and introduce yourselves.
I'm Matt Rounds. I'm from Pierre, and I'm going to school in Brookings this next year.
Good job, Jax.
My name is Ashlyn Simons. I'm from Sturgis, and I'm going to go into elementary education at BH.
Thank you, too, for spending these 2 weeks with us in Pierre. We've already put our pages to work this morning. If you have anything to hand out, they are our go-to people. If you are planning to testify, please make sure that you have signed the register at the back. And if you want your name spelled correctly, please sign legibly. With that, I would accept a motion on the minutes from our last meeting.
So moved. Second.
Moved by Dennard. Moved by Goodwin. Seconded by Clark to approve the minutes of the last meeting. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. All right. We have three bills to get through today, and then we are going to have a presentation on roundabouts. And I would like to first start with House Bill 1008. We started on that last week. I appointed a subcommittee, and I believe the committee did come up with an amendment, which has been distributed to you. Representative Rasmussen.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move House Bill 1008-OA.
Second.
All right, I have a motion by Rasmussen, a second by Representative Dennard. To move the amendment, 1008-OA. Comments on that motion?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. We had a good committee meeting. We decided together that the language that you see on line 11 and 12 was, for us, and on both parties, both sides, elusive. That different wasn't very definitive, and so different times of day really was or is referring to the traffic, and those individuals that are driving are the ones who will be determining how fast or how slow traffic should be going. So and the different type of vehicle, we felt that that was singling out, or some people could think that it was singling out certain kinds of vehicles, which was not the intent. And so the department was okay with just deleting those things that you see. There was a period put behind conditions on page 1, line 12, and then on the back, we added construction for construction workers.
For those who might be listening over the internet, if you have your bill in front of you, House Bill 1008, on line 11, we changed things, if the amendment is adopted, to say that differing speed limits may be established for varying weather conditions and any other factor that has a bearing on safe speed. So we shortened up that sentence a bit. And then on the back, we thought that fines for violating speed restrictions should apply to construction workers instead of just any workers. Are there any further comments on the motion to amend? Seeing none, this will be a voice vote. All in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The bill is amended. All right. Is there any other discussion on House Bill 1008 as amended? Is there committee motion?
Madam Chair.
I'm Representative Chase.
With the amendments, I would move do pass.
Okay. Is there a second? Rasmussen? All right. Comments on that motion?
I think we've gone through the bill. Compliments to the department for working with us and getting it cleaned up to where I think we're all comfortable now. And so I think it's ready for the floor.
Thank you. Any further comments? Seeing none, we will now vote on House Bill 1008 as amended. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. And the secretary will please call the roll.
Representative Chase.
Aye.
Schaefer.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Lesmeister. Excused. Bordeaux. Excused. Freimiller.
Aye.
Johnson. Excused. Livermont.
Aye.
Dennert.
Aye.
Goodwin.
Aye.
May.
Aye.
Rasmussen.
Aye.
Duvall.
Aye.
All right, that bill goes to the floor. Do pass amended. Representative Chase, would you be comfortable carrying this on the floor for us? Thank you very much. All right, we will now move to the top of our calendar. House Bill 1066, an act... An act to revise certain provisions regarding the issuance of vehicle license plates and stickers. Proponent testimony on House Bill 1066. Ms. Wired.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am Lisa Weyer, the Director of the Motor Vehicle Division for the Department of Revenue. And Madam Chair, I have an amendment, and with your permission, I would ask the pages to hand out copies to the committee.
Yes, please. Thanks.
Thank you.
While that is being done, do you want to just talk briefly about what the amendment is and then start explaining the bill?
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. The explanation of the amendment, 1066AA is what you're receiving, deletes Section 5 of the bill, which is on page 4. This section of the bill involves a situation when a customer purchases a vehicle from a dealer and receives a 45-day temporary permit. Before the 45 days, the customer must go to the county treasurer's office to apply for a title and receive that initial license plate. Through conversations with the county treasurers, it was confirmed that this section is not needed, as the title paperwork would always take place at the county treasurer's office, and it would not take place at the state level in the format of any electronic renewal methods. This was a fair point from the treasurers, and part of the process is working with them to create a good bill. So we'd like to introduce that amendment.
All right. We will deal with the amendment after we've heard proponent and opponent testimony on the entire bill. So if you want to give us your pitch, please. Thanks.
Right. House Bill 1066 is truly a bill to codify the current practice of the delivery and issuance of license plates today. Current law only authorizes county treasurers to deliver license plates and renewal stickers directly to the customers. However, the Department of Revenue currently issues and delivers license plates directly to the customers via the electronic renewal methods, such as the self-service terminals, the little kiosks that you see located throughout the state, and then also on our online customer portal. With 127 license plate types, it is impractical to stock all 127 plates at the county treasurer's offices. Of the 127 license plate types, 119 are specialty plates. It is necessary for the Department of Revenue to examine and approve specialty plate application requests due to certain specific plate requirements. It also provides consistency among the approval process. So rather than 66 county treasurers doing an approval process, there's one consistent method when the department does it for all specialty plates. With these 119 specialty license plates, the Department of Revenue reviews that plate application and upon approval, issues and delivers the license plate directly to the customer's home. The 119 specialty plate types are printed as needed in order to save money on stocking unnecessary inventory levels. That's the reason they are not stocked at the county treasurer offices. The county treasurers currently issue and deliver 8 license plate types directly to the customer from the inventory stocked at their county treasurer office. These 8 license plate types are the most commonly issued. We consider them kind of the standard license plates, and they do have the highest volume. Those 8 plates are the standard county vehicle plate, so it has the county identifier, the standard county motorcycle plate, the emblem or organizational plate, and the emblem motorcycle plate, 2 trailer plates, the commercial vehicle plate, and the commercial trailer plate, which is sometimes referred to as the U plate. House Bill 1066 does 3 things. First, it provides the proper legal authority for both the Department of Revenue and the county treasurers to issue and deliver license plates. This is current practice, and it has been in practice for many years. Second, with both the county treasurers and the Department of Revenue delivering license plates, clarification is made in this bill to specify the authorized fund the mailing fees are to be placed for distribution. If the county receives the mailing fee, the money is to be deposited in the county general fund. If the Department of Revenue receives the mailing fee, the money is to be deposited into the state motor vehicle fund, with any remaining monies at the end of the fiscal year dispersed to local governments from that state motor vehicle fund. Third, this bill codifies what license plate types will be available for issuance and delivery at the county treasurer's office, and what license plate types will be available for delivery and issuance by the Department of Revenue through the electronic methods of the self-service terminals and the online customer portal. So just to summarize, this bill provides the proper legal authority for both the department and the county treasurers to issue license plates, again, which is current practice. This bill only pertains to license plates and does not affect the current process of title applications, which are initiated at the county treasurer's office. This practice will remain in place. All initial vehicle title paperwork and license plate applications take place at the county treasurer's office. The Department of Revenue only delivers and issues license plates and stickers at the time of the renewal from the self-service terminals and the online customer portal. This bill codifies the 8 license plates, which will be stocked at the county treasurer's office, and as is current practice today. To make any changes to the stocking of the inventory at the county treasurer's office, future legislative action would have to take place if this bill would pass. House Bill 1066 is truly a bill to codify current practice. I encourage your support to vote yes on 1066, and I thank you for your time, and I'll stand by for questions.
Very good. Thank you very much. Are there any further proponents to House Bill 1066? Any further proponent testimony? Seeing none, are there any opponents to 1066? Any opponent testimony? Seeing none, let's open it up for committee questions. Representative Lesmeister.
Madam Chair, for Department of, I missed her name, I'm sorry. Are they? Listening. I'm sorry. Thank you. I actually had several letters actually from some county departments saying that by passage of this bill, they state that the department could be mailing all of the plates, striking all of the mailing from the treasurer's office, and these results would be in losing county funds for the mailings, and that the DOR will be taking more funds from the counties to process these titles. That would be less money for county roads and bridges. Can you elaborate on that, please?
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. To explain the, as far as that statement, as far as taking away money from the county treasurers, the current practice that we have it today has been how we've been doing it for 20 years. It will remain that way as far as the county treasurers. If a customer would come into the county treasurer office and decide that they want to have their plates mailed to another location, that county treasurer has that absolute right to mail those plates, and they would receive that mailing fee, that money. In the case where the department issues the plate through a self-service terminal or the online customer portal, the county treasurer is not in that interaction. It's from the self-service terminal to that customer. In that situation, the department would receive the mailing fee, but we do not have it in law right now, which is what we're wanting to add to this bill, is that money would go into the state motor vehicle fund. And that is where we've been putting it in the past. We just would like that very black and white, that that's where it needs to go, because that is the one fund that any money remaining at the end of the fiscal year is distributed to local governments. And that's where this money should go, rightfully so.
In this fund, is there ever any monies left over? Has that been dispersed every year to the county level then?
Madam Chair, in the state motor vehicle fund, I do not have specific numbers, but I can tell you typically money is reverted back to local government.
Put that on our list of things we want to follow up for information on. Any further questions? Representative Chase.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll give it a couple questions real quickly. The plates that are issued, if the individual wants to go to the treasurer's office the next year to get the stickers to put on, they can do that. It doesn't have to go back through the department to be mailed out. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Chase, if I can understand your question, you're asking if a customer wants to go get their stickers for their plate, they can go to the county treasurer's office.
Okay.
That's absolutely correct.
Okay. Then one more question. Counties that have wheel taxes, if the funds come to the department, does the department issue the wheel tax funds back to the county treasurers?
Madam Chair?
That's a little afield of where this bill is, but please answer.
Wheel tax money actually is collected at the county level, and they retain it at the county level. It does not come to the state.
Okay.
Further questions? All right. With that, we do have an amendment. Would anyone care? Representative Rasmussen?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move Amendment 1066AA.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. It has been moved by Representative Rasmussen, seconded by Representative Clark, to move 1066AA, which basically strikes Section 5 of the bill. Any comments on that? Representative Livermont.
Speaker, Chairman, I'm just concerned if this that's just going to strike that whole deal about where will they, like if you buy a used car, is there another section of this law that's or addresses the 45-day license permit?
Actually, the way this works is if we take this section out of House Bill 1066, the law will remain unamended on the books as it is today. This was proposing to change the law on the books, and the amendment basically says, no, we don't want to make that change. We want to leave the law the way it is right now. So it would just continue. All right, this will be a voice vote on House Bill 1066AA. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, the bill is amended. Further committee comments, questions, discussion, or action? Anyone?
Madam Chair.
Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to pass 1066.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. I think Representative Clark was just a little bit faster. So moved by Representative Rasmussen, seconded by Representative Clark, do pass as amended. Any comments on that motion? Seeing none, we have a do pass motion on the floor. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. And the Secretary will please call the roll.
Representative Chase.
Aye.
Schaefer.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Lesmeister.
Pass.
Bordeaux, excused. Freimiller.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Livermont.
Pass.
Dennert.
Aye.
Goodwin.
Aye.
May.
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Representative Lesmeister.
Aye.
Representative Livermont.
Aye.
Rasmussen.
Aye.
Duvall.
Aye.
All right, we'll go to the floor as amended, and I will carry this one on the floor. And with that, we will move to our third bill of the day before we get to our show and tell. Let me check my notes here. All right, House Bill 1080, an act to revise requirements to qualify for emblem specialty plates for motor vehicles. Proponent testimony. Welcome, Representative Shane Fish.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Representative Kyle Shane Fish from District 19. HB 1080 will bring more flexibility to nonprofit organizations who would like to qualify for an emblem specialty plate for motor vehicles. Right now, an organization needs 200 members to qualify. This bill adds in the option of having 200 donors or volunteers. It will allow organizations like Feeding South Dakota to qualify to be able to get a specialty emblem with this rule change. It's my understanding that in their bylaws, they list that they don't have members, so due to the statute, they're not allowed to get that plate. This bill will bring more flexibility with allowing organizations to qualify while still also maintaining a threshold of 200 members. I ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. And this is really timely because as we talk about volunteer organizations, Representative Reed, would you please come up and tell us who just joined the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Tim Reed from District 7 in Brookings, and today I have pretty much our whole Scout Troop 13, Boy Scout Troop 13 from Brookings, and they will be seeing each branch of the government today. The governor will be meeting with them and also the Chief Justice, and they'll be joining us on the floor for a little while this afternoon on the House side. So thank you for allowing me to introduce all of our Scouts.
Thank you.
All right, back to business now. Are there any further proponents for House Bill 1080? Further proponent testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Heather Villa, and I'm here on behalf of the Department of Revenue to encourage your support on House Bill 1080. The Department of Revenue receives and processes the applications for nonprofit entities applying for emblem decals. They've had to turn down some very reputable nonprofits, such as Feeding South Dakota, due to the wording of the statute requiring that an organization has a minimum of 200 members. Many organizations do not have a membership. However, they do have a lot of volunteers or sponsors and donors. With the change in this bill, nonprofit organizations such as Feeding South Dakota would qualify for approval of an emblem decal, and then they can use those decals to sell as a fundraising tool for their organization. And please support House Bill 1080. I'll stand by for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any further proponents to House Bill 1080? Any further proponents? Are there any opponents to House Bill 1080? Any opponent testimony? Seeing none, are there any committee questions? Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question as far as there any additional costs.
Madam Chair, as far as additional costs, the organization, they pay a fee to receive the decals. It's a cost for the production of the decals, and then they can choose the amount they want to sell them for, so all the profits do go back to the organization for fundraising.
Oh. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Who decides who gets the emblem plate? Would that be the organization, the Department of Revenue?
The actual license plate, anyone can have an emblem plate. The decals to go on it is what this bill addresses, because there is criteria that the organization has to qualify to get an approved emblem decal. So the organization would decide if they're only selling them to members or who they're going to send these decals to. Sometimes they will send them out for free. Sometimes there is a cost associated with them.
No, thank you.
All right. Any more questions from the committee? Thank you very much. With that, I will open it up for committee discussion and or action. Representative Dennert.
I would move do pass.
Second.
Representative Dennert moved. Representative Goodwin seconded a do pass. Any comments on that motion? What a chatty bunch today. All right, with that, I will ask the secretary to please call the vote.
Representative Chase.
Aye.
Schaefer.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Lesmeister.
Aye.
Bordeaux excused. Fry Miller?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Livermont?
Aye.
Dennert?
Aye.
Goodwin?
Aye.
May?
Aye.
Rasmussen?
Aye.
Duvall?
Aye.
All right, Representative Shane Fish, your bill is going to the floor with the unanimous support of the House Transportation Committee. Thank you very much. And now it's time for show and tell. I asked that we've had some questions about roundabouts, and so I thought I would go to the experts on this, and I'm just going to turn it over, Mr. Boehm, Mr. Jaunt, whoever wants to lead off. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike Boehm. I'm the Director of Planning Engineering for the Department of Transportation. I do apologize. My voice is a little weak this morning. I coach 6 hockey games for a bunch of 9 and 10-year-olds up in Aberdeen, and they tend to forget to come off the ice, so there's a lot of yelling, saying, hey, you got to switch, you got to switch, but we'll get through this. I do have a presentation, so we get the video screens on. It may be helpful. Upon crashes. These are cost based on fatal crashes, serious injury crashes, minor injury crashes. All those data elements are used to help determine the most cost beneficial alternative for that particular project. And then it comes down to making a choice. So a couple of things that we're doing on the intersections, I'll just go through them very briefly. One is installation of center turn lanes or installation of rural turn lanes across the state. A center turn lane has been a tremendous safety improvement. It gets the left turning vehicles out of the through movement, allows that through movement to go forward. What could happen if the center turn lane is not there, you run the risk of more rear-end collisions. And, of course, the left turner may be making a quicker decision than they possibly could, trying to shoot that gap, seeing somebody coming in from behind them. The installation of rural turn lanes as well, trying to get people off the thoroughfare, whether it's a right turn lane or a left turn lane, and we have multiple number of turn lanes across our state highway system. Some of the newer technologies that we've looked at is called an intersection conflict warning system. We are well known for our acronyms. We call this an ICWIS for the South Dakota Department of Transportation. This is actually our first installation that occurred at the intersection of Highway 46 and 37 in Bonham County. The cost of the installation was $150,000. It's a little bit different than what you see at a standard intersection that has a flashing light that goes continually 24/7. Instead, this light is actually, there's loops in the pavement on either side of the intersection. So as a vehicle approaches the intersection, it provides that warning light to drivers that there's a vehicle approaching the intersection. Again, as I mentioned earlier, 93% of our crashes have some behavior element to them. So if we can ask drivers or inform drivers to maybe make better decisions and better defensive driving techniques as they come up to intersections, we have a significant improvement in safety. South Dakota DOT did not pioneer this technology. MnDOT actually was one of the first to install it, and they have multiple installations across Minnesota. I don't want to say we're slow to adopt new technologies, but we definitely want to make sure they're working before we start looking at implementing those technologies in our state. We also have another installation plan at the intersection of Highway 281 and South Dakota 20 in Spink County. So for those of you that are familiar with that intersection, another installation that we have planned. So we'll get into roundabouts a little bit. And I mentioned earlier that we have 8 single-lane roundabouts planned in South Dakota. They're being considered. And for those of you that have seen National Lampoon's Vacation, where it gets caught in the traffic rotary, that is not what we're looking to install. It's a great clip. I get a kick out of it every time I see it. But we're looking at a single-lane roundabout. Minnesota does have installations of multi-lane roundabouts, but right now we are looking at a single-lane roundabout. And the reason for it is the 2 points you see up there. Significant reduction in fatal crashes and injury crashes associated with the installation of a roundabout. And, of course, it can help improve capacity. And I was talking about signals and the cost of signals and that they're only used in high-traffic locations. The same thing can be said for roundabouts. A roundabout isn't meant for a state highway to township road intersection. The key criteria we're looking at is equal volumes coming into that intersection. With equal volumes, the roundabout functions better than a stop controller, can function better than a signalized intersection because traffic continues to move. Digging in a little bit more about why they're safer, you remember the 32 conflict points that I mentioned earlier with a standard two-lane to two-lane intersection? Now you look at the roundabouts, 8 conflict points associated with a roundabout. And remember how I talked about the open circles, the crossing maneuver, the T-bone crash, the high severity of crashes associated with those? The crash types that are most common at a roundabout are merging or diverging. So what would they look like? It would mainly be a rear-end collision or a sideswipe collision that occurred at a roundabout. The challenge is with a standard two-legged intersection or a two-lane intersection, of course, is that speed differential. So if you can imagine a rear-end collision as you're going 20 to 25 miles an hour through the roundabout, probably not going to be as severe as you'd see at a two-lane to two-lane intersection. The same thing with a sideswipe. Both vehicles are generally moving in the same direction. A lot less energy dispersion occurs at those. So that's the purpose, or that's the reason we see that significant reduction in fatal and serious injury crashes. So some basic components about a roundabout and how do they work. Some of the things you'll see is a counterclockwise flow. So as you come into the roundabout, you'll stay on the right side and you do a counterclockwise flow. You also have a center island. Center island is important to ensure that drivers that come into the roundabout can negotiate around the roundabout. We have the truck apron, and I'll get into that a little bit more. But the intent behind a truck apron is really to allow those rear tires, those trailers, to encroach as they go around the roundabout to allow for that off-track into those large vehicles. We have a splitter island, which is located each and every single one of the legs of the intersection, again, to help guide that traffic as they're coming into the roundabout. And then you also see the yield line and the flared entry, which points them in the direction of that counterclockwise flow. And lastly is the yield line. There's one rule of a roundabout, and the rule of a roundabout is yield to traffic already in the roundabout. So that's the one rule, and the yield line is important on that. As I mentioned earlier, I think a significant concern that we've heard from folks as we've gone across the state and held public meetings at locations where we're considering roundabouts is trucking. And trucking is vitally important to South Dakota from our agricultural commodity standpoint, moving them from farm to market, and also the commercial traffic that we see across our state. So as we take a look at trucks and how our trucks accommodated, again, we're going to take a little bit of a look at the truck apron, and that's a vital component of a roundabout. As you can see, the truck apron has got a different color than the through traffic. I was talking to Mr. Adrian a couple nights ago in regards to roundabouts, and he made the comment, well, that's to make sure those darn cars don't get in the middle of it. And he's exactly right. It's to ensure cars don't try to drive around or drive through the truck apron. But the intent is very important. A lot of us have hauled either recreational vehicles or hauled agricultural commodities. As you make that left turn or that right turn, you have off-tracking. your tires don't stay where they would if you were driving a four-wheeler or a car. So that point of the truck apron is vital in order to allow that truck movement to move through there. So what we'll do is we'll take a look at our design. This is actually one of the designs that's been used. The pink you see is the off-tracking or the tracking of the second trailer as it's moving through the roundabout. That helps us to determine the diameter of the roundabout for one, and also what we need for a truck apron in order to accommodate those tires to encroach up on that roundabout. After a lot of discussion and review internally and design alternatives, we did go out and lay out a roundabout. The video you're about to see is an actual roundabout that we laid out in South Dakota. The pink that you see are the truck apron areas where those rear tires are intended to actually encroach up on that area as the truck makes it through there. You can see the cones. Those are essentially the curb and gutter where the splitter islands would be or the edge of the roundabout. And we'll just take a quick second to watch. It's a double. Of course, a lot of doubles that we see in South Dakota, ag haulers. This particular driver, this was their first time ever negotiating through a roundabout. So they took it slow. They took it relatively slow, but you can see where they encroached with the rear tires. So as we go through our designs, we've been leveraging everything that we can from other states and what have they done for their designs. Of course, that's important. We've had external reviews done with our designs. Our first installation is planned at the intersection of the South Connector and Highway 81 in Watertown. That will occur this summer. Are the locations that are being considered and planned now. We have two planned in Sisseton and also one at the intersection of Highway 42 and Wall Lake, for those of you who are familiar with that area. And again, I hate to be redundant, but the main reason that we're looking at roundabout installations, and they're not everywhere, again, 8 out of over 11,000 locations that we have across the state of South Dakota, is really for safety and safety purposes, and it also can help improve capacity, but mainly safety. And I think we've all seen these signs as we travel across the state, and it's not just the emotional toll, although that's huge for us. There's the financial toll associated with a fatality or a serious injury crash. Now, over the weekend, I had a chance to talk with a teacher and visit with them a little bit about a student they had in their class that suffered a serious head injury. And there was definitely emotion tied to that discussion that we had about the challenges, the day-to-day challenges she has managing the classroom, but also the impact it has on the resources within the school district. The resources now, as that child's fairly young, as they grow older in order to be a part of society. Yeah, there's a significant financial burden, but for me, myself, I try to be as unemotionally biased as I can, but they do get to me. And as we look at our mission in South Dakota DOT and why do we exist, and our mission is to effectively provide a safe and efficient transportation system. So as the opportunities come up to provide that safe and efficient transportation system, it's our mission to do that, to make sure that we can get people home at night, reduce those fatalities, and hopefully reduce the potential for more head injuries as the situation that I mentioned earlier. But with that, Madam Chair, not knowing exactly what you wanted to get into, hopefully I gave you a brief enough overview of roundabouts.
Thank you very much. That was, I think, kind of fascinating, especially like the video at the end. Are there questions from any committee members? Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are these roundabouts mostly inside of city limits? Because I went to one over in Minnesota, and I mean, you really got to slow down to go around them. So out in the country where somebody comes flying by, you wouldn't have a roundabout there, would you?
Madam Chair, a roundabout installation could be in a rural situation or in an urban situation. It really, it It's a function of what are you trying to mitigate? Do you have a significant crash history there? Can you get people through safer or quicker? I know that when I talked with Mr. Adrian, he mentioned the Killdeer roundabouts up in North Dakota, and those are rural roundabouts, and they were installed, you know, generally towards the beginning of that oil boom. They were having a lot of crashes occurring at some of those intersections, and those installations, again, they do accommodate trucks through there. They're wider and larger roundabouts, so they're not confined to an urban area. They're not necessarily confined to a rural area either. It comes back to what issues are you trying to mitigate, and what issues are you seeing, or could you mitigate? And again, roundabouts are just one tool, or one tool in the toolbox.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm sure you gave us these numbers, but I'm going to ask them again. Mm-hmm. So the number of intersections in the state, do you have that figure?
Madam Chair, the number of intersections, again, this is just for the state highway system. So how many intersections are on the state highway system? It's over 11,000. I believe it was 11,760, but over 11,000.
Okay. Follow up, Madam Chair. And how many deaths have been attributed then to the accidents at these state highway intersections?
Madam Chair, I don't actually have the numbers for the state highway crashes at intersections. Assuming that 27% of our fatal and serious injury crashes occur at state highways, we have approximately 100 to 125 crashes, fatalities every year. I can definitely get you those numbers. We do see higher volumes on the state highway system, so even though our mileage is less, we do see a higher proportional share of crashes just due to the volume, but I can get that number for you.
That'd be great. Follow up. And back up to the cost associated with the roundabouts versus, say, your standard intersection. I know you gave those figures, but I didn't get them wrote down.
Madam Chair, Representative May, thank you for reminding me. I did not give you the dollar figure for the roundabouts, and you did a very nice job being nice to me on that. I appreciate it. It was $1 to $2 million for a roundabout installation. So a standardized intersection with signs, it's going to be relatively minimal, thousands of dollars for the sign installation. Signalized intersection, approximately $250,000 to $500,000, depending upon what needs to be done to accommodate that signal.
Oh, I had a follow-up, but I can't remember what it was now.
Any other questions? Representative Blessmeister.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Offsetting intersections, I had a few truckers ask me about them. You know, they come down to a highway intersection, they stop, they turn out, and they go a quarter of a mile for say, and have to reshift and gear again and stuff. I'm assuming that's a safety factor you guys put into play, not just aligning them intersections. Can you elaborate on that, please?
Madam Chair, Representative Lesmeister, yes, usually we try to do the tee-in or the button hook or tie things in during a reconstruction project, similar to a roundabout installation or any large-scale installation, just due to the fact that the cost associated with making that modification on a resurfacing project or on its own, generally we can't justify the expenditures from a benefit-to-cost ratio. Now, if we have an issue out there or you have a specific location that you have concerns on, we could definitely take a look at it. We have done some of that. For those of you that recall, Highway 14, for example, and 34 out west of town here, that was a little bit different configuration. That project was done on itself because we could get the cost to come out on that one. But generally speaking, our goal is not to have offsets because that does create a significant issue. The further you get offset, you know, if you're a half mile or so, not as big of an issue. But if we're offset, you know, 400 feet, 600 feet, or 800 feet, that can cause a significant issue. So that's something we try to avoid and we work to fix on our reconstruction projects.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the rumble bars that we all know about at the intersections, is that a mandatory? Is that something that the DOT now just automatically does every time we redo that, say, that portion of the highway coming to the intersections?
Madam Chair, I wouldn't say we're doing it all the time. We're doing it on a large proportion of the state highway to state highway intersections. A lot of the county road intersections that come up to the state highway, they may not have it unless we have some sort of crash history associated with it. It's one of the low-cost safety improvements that can be done at an intersection. Unfortunately, we tend to see folks blowing through intersections at points in time, whether they're distracted, not paying attention, or intentionally doing it. We hope they aren't, but unfortunately, we see a lot of that, and again, we see pretty serious crashes when they occur. So the vast majority of state highway to state highway intersections, you will see that rumble bar in the roadway, again, to alert drivers there's a stop control situation coming up. Pay attention, trying to impact that driver behaviors that come up to the intersection.
Plus, they drive my dogs nuts. Any questions? Any further questions from anyone?
Chair.
Representative Goodwin.
What's your criteria in regard to which gets a roundabout, or do you have like a certain intersection that has higher fatalities or accidents? I mean, do you have a criteria to pick which ones, or is it just East River towns to get them?
Madam Chair. Representative Goodwin, no, I don't believe we dictate installation based upon where the river is, but no. There's no set criteria for we are going to install a roundabout at this location, that location. It really becomes a menu of options. And what issues are you trying to fix, and which one is the most cost-effective to mitigate that situation? So it is reviewed, and it's generally reviewed at intersections that may have a signal or may have volumes that are approaching the criteria where the Federal Highway Administration says we could install a signal, or there may be locations where we have a significant crash history that we've tried multiple things at that location, and this is the best alternative from a cost standpoint. So there is no indication of this is automatically going to be one or the other. It comes down to running the benefits to cost, and if the highest benefit to cost ratio is alternative one, two, or three, we'll go with alternative one as a recommendation as we meet with the public and visit with our Transportation Commission.
Last call for questions. Thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time to come over. Pages, I have something I would like you to pass out. One of the questions that came up at our first meeting was a concern about railroad safety, and we have a document that explains the issue that Representative Goodwin was concerned about, and so that's just to take and read. And if you have questions about that, get back to me or to Tim Doherty, who was kind enough to put that together for us. That's for informational purposes. Two days from now, Thursday, we will have three bills on our agenda. One of them is House Bill 1107. It's a really thick bill, but it is something I've been working on with the counties several months now. It is a cleanup bill. There's a lot of stuff in there, so I would encourage you to skim through that before we get to committee on Thursday. We will also take up House Bills 1116 and 1117 dealing with license plates. And then we will have the Secretary of Transportation and someone from the Department of Revenue explain Senate Bill 1, the highway funding package that we put together in 2015. So that's what is on the agenda for Thursday. Is there anything else to come before the committee? I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
To adjourn.
Moved by Clark, seconded by
Cool.
Who? Representative Goodwin. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you.